everybody, and welcome back to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are happy to be queer to answer your questions. I'm Gina.
And I'm Cheyenne.
And class is now in session. We have a guest today that I'm super excited about because she's one of my favorite authors. I have all three of her books signed on my shelf right now. Melissa, can you introduce yourself to everybody and tell us a little about you?
Sure. My name is Melissa Broder. I'm the author of the novels Milkfed, Death Valley, and The Pisces, and the essay collection So Sad Today, and five books of poetry, including Superdoom. My pronouns are she, her. I am a Virgo with a Scorpio moon and a Sag rising, and I've got my dog Pickle here right on my lap.
Stop. I have a cat named Pickles. Pickles with an S at the end.
Okay. Yes. Pickle's singular, actually.
Yeah. Singular bean.
So cool. Love it.
We love Pickle. Yeah. How do you identify? I'm just based on your books, I was going to guess bisexual, but is there a certain label that you would use?
Yeah, I guess bi is, you know, I mean, I think like probably pansexual, although like, I feel like I'm too old to change my driver's license at this point. So like bisexual, totally.
I mean, they're kind of one in the same, I would think.
I've been
right?
Bi forever. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that queer journey and what, if you came out, what everything coming to terms with that was like?
Sure. So I always knew. I went to all girls school for 13 years and just always knew that, you know, I liked, boys and girls, and, when I was in my early 20s, also dated like a number of trans people. And I've always just been very fluid. But it wasn't until I started dating a woman in my early 20s that, you know, I felt like I had to come out. Basically, my coming out story is very similar to Rachel's in Milkfed, where I was talking to my mother. I was living in San Francisco and she was on the East Coast. And she was trying to set me up with someone in SF. And I kept saying, no, no. And she's like, well, are you seeing someone? I was finally, or are you seeing like a guy there? And finally I was like, well, I am seeing someone, and you know, it's a woman. So that was like, in terms of, I think that was like the hardest part was with, and a challenge in being bisexual too, because it's like, you know, she didn't really necessarily like believe me, you know, because she's like, well, why wouldn't you just date men if you can date men? So yeah, but I've always been fluid, always.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of plot lines in your books that are similar to things that you've experienced in real life like that? Like you said, with Rachel's coming out in Milkfed?
Definitely. And it's funny too, because I feel like my most recent novel, Death Valley, is like probably the protagonist is probably the most similar to myself. And in the sense that, you know, her father was in a car accident and was in the ICU, has been in the ICU for 5 months. My father was in a car accident and in the ICU for 6 months before he passed. But then there's like a big diversion where she gets lost in the desert for multiple days. I have gotten lost in the desert, but it was for about 45 minutes. It felt like multiple days. And she explores and ventures into a magical cactus. But I myself have not done that. So it's sort of a send up of auto fiction, because a lot of times people ask, people are always asking novelists, has this happened to you? You know, what's your connection? Like, people always sort of want to know the connection. So that book is really like a send up of auto fiction.
Yeah. It seems kind of really alternate reality, other paths that could have happened to you almost in that scenario, at least.
Totally. Like, the protagonist is sort of an alter ego. And it was actually funny because when I was recording the audiobook, after I was done, the audio engineer was like, did all that stuff really happen to you? And I was like, yes, I went inside a magic cactus and flew up a mountain on a magic bird.
Do you want to meet my pet rocks? Like, they're right
exactly.
Here.
Exactly.
That's wow. So funny. I feel like with your three novels, there's like the blatant queerness of Milkfed and then more subtle queerness in Death Valley and the Pisces, but it's still there. Would you classify these books, all three of them, as LGBTQ, or are they in like their own subgenre? Like, since they're not queer, but like the Pisces, I have it on a queer bookshelf, but like, is it sort of, you know?
I like hearing that you have it on a queer bookshelf. I think that that's really cool. You know, it's so hard for me to classify my own work. Like, sometimes I'll meet someone, like, you know, I'll be in an Uber and someone will ask me what I do. The driver will ask what I do for a living. And I'll say, I'm a writer. And they'll say, oh, what do you write? And I'll say, novels. And they'll say, what kind of novels? And I'm just like, contemporary literary fiction with a taste of magical realism and some pathos and some humor, you know, like it's so hard for me to classify. I think what's more fun and more interesting for me is when readers themselves really come to find meanings in books that, you know, I myself either like didn't consciously intend or did intend, but didn't make explicit. Like an example of such, and it's always interesting to me, like recently someone tweeted to me a picture and they said, this is Theo the Merman from the Pisces. And it was this like hot bearded dude. And I was like, Theo doesn't have a beard. But then I was like, of course he has a beard. Like, where would he get, he's a merman. Where would he get a razor in the ocean? You know? And
that just mean he didn't have hair follicles on his face, if not, because yeah, he's
exactly.
not shaving.
So it's something I would have never guessed. So I don't qualify or disqualify my books as LGBTQ. Like, they're really probably as fluid as I am. And so therefore, you know, they are.
Yeah. I put the Pisces and Milkfed on a list that was called Weird Sapphic Books for Weird Sapphic Girls, if that helps the next Uber ride that you have explain anything.
Awesome. I love it.
Is it something that you like? Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry, Cheyenne.
No,
you
it's got, okay.
I feel like I'm just taking over today.
Well, I was just going to ask, we kind of had talked about both of the other books kind of being you, not really, but the Pisces, what was your inspiration for that? Or like, was there any one thing that you saw or heard or like dreamt that you were like, I need to write this book?
Yeah, so around that time, my husband and I had been in an open marriage for a number of years, and we had closed the marriage, and I was trying to figure out why, like, a love that is like sort of not therapist condoned and like at a distance and like really a projection, like you don't know the person so well, doesn't feel as like titillating and intoxicating as like a love that is like healthy and present and in your life. And I was in Venice, where I was living at the time, Venice Beach, and I was on the beach reading this book called The Professor and the Siren by Giuseppe Tomasi di Lampedusa about a man who falls in love with a mermaid. And I was like, why is it always this older man and this young mermaid? Why is it never like an older woman and a merman? And I thought of the mer figure as like the ultimate in impossible desire, right? Like, you literally can't live in the same sort of terrain, you know, like one has to live in the ocean and one has to live on land. And that was how it got kicked off.
Okay. That's really
That's
interesting.
Fun.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Since every novel kind of has something queer about it, is that something that you're adding consciously, or is it like did you set out to be like, oh, this merman is going to smell like pussy and I'm going to play with his nipples and things, and that's going to be like the queerness? Like, was that a conscious decision or something that just kind of happened because it's like a part of who you are?
I think it just happened, like, as no pun intended, like fluidly, you know, like it, like my sexuality feels like oceanic and ever morphing, and I can find like beauty and desire for like anyone, no matter their gender, you know? And so like, I think that there's also in the way I perceive people, there's probably like a lot of blurring of gender, you know? And like I've been with enough people who like identified as or like I can see glimmers or parts of people, you know, like I think we all contain like, and also it varies at different times, like this fluidity of masculine and feminine. And so I don't think it was necessarily conscious, you know, I think it was more conscious and milk-fed in the sense that Rachel's having to face these questions about herself as to like her queerness, and also particularly because her love interest, Miriam, you know, it's forbidden in her religion. So that were like at least in the fundamental element of her religion. So that was a more conscious choice. But I think otherwise it sort of happens less consciously. Like a lot of people have told me that the cactus in Death Valley is very sapphic because like the protagonist, like, and there was actually like a bunch of writers in New York Magazine who did like a sort of different, their different interpretations of the cactus. And you know, she enters it, it's really, it's quite va it's a very phallic shape. The cactus is a, you know, the saguaro cactus is very phallic, but she enters it through a hole that is very vaginal. So it contains both. It contains
Sorry, my
multitudes.
dog's barking. Yeah, it is like a slit. I can definitely see how it can be sapphic in that sense. It's all encompassing, really, this cactus.
Totally.
I love it.
Do you have like a favorite out of the books you've written out of the three novels, or even the So Sad Today? Is there one that's like, this is my baby, or are you like, no, I birthed all of these, I created all of these, they're all equal, I love them equally, like any parent.
Sometimes I can't even believe that I wrote any of them, you know, like I'm working on a new novel right now and I'm just like, how do you write a novel? But I think the Pisces I have a special connection to because it's my first novel. So, you know, it's like my firstborn. But no, I feel you know, I love all my children.
Some of the questions that we got from listeners when we did like a queer books episode, I wanted to get your take on as an author. Someone asked, do you think LGBTQ should be its own genre or like its own section of the library?
That's really interesting. I think that, you know, everything, so much of life is like a Venn diagram, right? Like when I was trying to describe my books to the Uber driver, although now I'm going to say it's a, they're sapphic books for sapphic girls, but sapphic people. But right now I have it. It's all done. I've got my elevator pitch. But no, I think that, you know, I was recently in a bookstore in Santa Monica in LA where the books were arranged like rather than by fiction, nonfiction, they were arranged by like what you are desiring. So let's say like you were desiring escape. Let's say you were like the novels. Let's say you are desiring and I think that like I guess like on a personal level, I would qualify my books as like you are desiring to try to like figure out how to like live in a body more comfortably on this earth, right? The challenge of that. But in terms of like a broader sort of library or like sociological sense, I don't know if I have the answer to that question. I think it really depends on what the reader is seeking. And I would be against, I would see, I think that it's important to have you know, like gay awards and queer book lists and like for access and so that people can access them, but I don't know about like the separation. I like to think of as of books as being fluid because something can be a queer book, but it can also be speculative, you know, and at the same time, like it can also be a romance, and at the same time, it can also be literary fiction. So I've always been sort of a little bit averse to straight up genre qualifications. Like my favorite books are books of where if like my favorite books are like they have contain elements of humor, magic, and longing. And if a book has all three of those, you know, then it's a favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say the categories that you described your book as for the Uber driver. Like, if you said that to me, I'd be like, okay, sign me up. I love all of those categories. So that sounds a lot like the kinds of books you were into. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. What were you saying about your bookshelf?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I'm just looking at my bookshelf and I'm like, okay, like Open Throat by Henry Hoke, or like Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl, you know, like those are some of my favorite books. And like, they contain, right, like you could say like, okay, this is sort of speculative, or this is humor, or this is magic, this is queer, right? So it could be on different shelves. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the compartmentalizing. I sort of hesitate to compartmentalize. I think when it's about access and expansion, then like labels are great. And I think when it becomes more about compartmentalizing, not as good.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, what are some of your favorite queer books? And you obviously just named two, but are there any others that come to mind?
Totally. I mean, I'm looking at my shelf right now. I really loved Mrs. S. That was a wonderful, well, I enjoy Miranda July's work a lot. And I really liked The First Bad Man. And I really liked her new book, All Fours, which is definitely a queer work. I read a book recently that I liked, The Adult by Bronwyn Fisher. That was an awesome book. I Wished by Dennis Cooper, I loved.
Have you read this by Dennis Cooper? I haven't read it
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, it's really list. Good.
I'm trying to find the audiobook, but none of the libraries I have cards for.
Yes. So I really liked it. 100 Boyfriends by Brontës Pernell. Loved 100 Boyfriends. Let's see. Just looking through all of my books that I love.
When I saw you at Strand in New York last month, you had just read Lexi Freeman. Was that a queer book?
Not really. No. So
she also wrote Inappropriation, which I would recommend. I would recommend it. It is, I would classify it as like queer under like a non-binary kind of label. It was really cool. I liked it a lot.
Cool. Yeah. I will. Yeah, I'm good. I would love to read it because I really liked the Book of Iron. Confessions of a Mask by Yukio Mishima. Wonderful book. Let's see. I'm just looking and seeing. I'd say Chemical Pink by Katie Arnoldi has some queer elements to it. Yeah. No, I mean, there's a ton. I could like send you a list. but I Look Divine by Christopher Coe. Okay, I'll stop.
Are there any authors, queer or otherwise, that you really like look up to or take inspiration from, or that have shaped your writing and your career?
Yeah, I would say my two favorite writers are probably Thomas Bernhard and Clarice Lispector.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are like my two sort of like North Stars.
Yeah, what kind of, I mean, obviously, genre, lumping these things into single words is hard, but what kind of books would you say they write, or what kind of stories do they tell?
Both of them are definitely experimental, I would say, like, or could be considered experimental and meditative. Very, Bernhard's books are very like circuitous, and they're sort of like often very ranty. Like it's like you go into like they both go down rabbit holes of thought and feeling.
Is there a world in the future where there's a novel you write about someone who's in an open marriage and in the process of closing it? Cause that already sounded like its own plot line to me. That could be really cool.
Yeah. I mean, well, I have an essay about it called I Told You Not to Get the Knish, and that is in So Sad Today, and it's also online, so you could check that out. And it's called Thoughts on Open Marriage and Illness, and it's about like the closing of my marriage. But the book I am working on right now has elements of that, but like retrospectively.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Without giving too much away.
Can I ask what led to that? Like, what was the reason to open and close? Like, what was there a turning point where you were like, this is just not what was working anymore? Or like, is there something you can share about that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think opening it was simply like I was very young. Like I was 24 when I met my husband, and he was 34, which is also sort of young. And we got married like 5 years later. And I think we just both weren't ready to like after we had been monogamous for 4 years, it was just kind of like, like like the end? No. And so we were open. So we were monogamous for 5 years. We were open for like about 6 or 7. And then we've been monogamous, well, monogamish again for like the past 10. And still sort of some open, but different rules. But I think it was because like, well, basically like I fell for someone and that was like against the rules. And I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like not, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to like unfall, you know, if like I don't know if I'm gonna be able to unfall if like it's still open. Like I felt like I needed sort of a more firm boundary to sort of to
Yeah, I was gonna ask, how do you unfall for someone? But I guess the distance probably helped.
Yeah, it took a long time. It took years and I had to write a novel. And a lot of essays.
Yeah, you channeled the longing elsewhere.
Exactly. It's creative energy.
Yeah,
You know,
definitely.
lust and love are creative energy, and you can, there's so many different things to create.
Absolutely. I think it would be cool to see more books that incorporate polyamory. Like, I don't think that's a very common plot line in any sort of romance or just like books, period.
Totally.
Yeah.
Were there any queer characters you related to when you were younger that you can remember reading about? Was there anyone that you were like, I see myself in that character? I know that's kind of, it's hard to remember every book you've read, but.
No, I felt like there was actually like much more of a deficit when I was growing up. Like I'm old. And so no, there wasn't. It was more just like sexuality in general, or like books, like food. Like I remember being really young and like reading Judy Blume and like you know, characters with like food stuff, characters with sexuality, and just being like, oh, okay. All right, you know. But no, not growing up.
Yeah. Have you read any books recently where you felt like that character, like there was a character that filled that void that you were missing growing up? Or any that you were like, this is me, but on paper. How did they get my life story?
Not like not in a mirror way, but like I do think that like the book Mrs. S, and you know, having gone to like an all-girls school, you know, and sort of like the longing and desire, that book's set at an all-women's school. And that's like that book definitely resonated with my young experience for sure.
Yeah, I haven't read that one, but I'm pretty sure it's on my list, and now I'm interested to read it.
By Kay Patrick. I thought it was awesome.
My girlfriend went to an all-girls school briefly, so I
Oh,
wonder if I could
cool.
relate to
So cool.
it.
Yeah, I would say read it up.
I will. It's
Yeah,
definitely on
it's
the
wonderful.
list. What are your thoughts on I don't want to say like bad representation. I'm putting this in air quotes for anyone listening. But have you heard people get kind of upset when like a queer character is not a good person, and like you kind of have to defend your choice to write a not good character? Like you're like, this isn't me, by the way. I don't agree with everything my character's doing. It's just the story. Do you have any thoughts on that kind of like character development or plot device story? I don't know. I don't know all the phrases, but you know what I mean. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Do we have to be perfect to
Well,
be in?
Carmen Machado has like some amazing things to say about that, actually. Like she's talked a lot about in depth about like queer characters, like, that they deserve to have as much depth, right, as straight characters, and like they don't have to be seen as like angelic or perfect. Yeah, she's written a lot about that. It's quite fascinating, particularly in her book In the Dream House. Yeah, and I love her story. I love her short stories. But yeah, but she wrote about that in the Dream House. And then, like, in terms of the unlikable protagonist, it's funny because people are always like, you write such a great unlikable protagonist. And I'm always like, really? Because I like them.
Yeah,
I
I
feel
feel
like
like
to me,
I
they're not
often
unlikable.
read. I read books that are like unlikable characters, but I like them. But I mean, sometimes you're like, I'm not totally condoning everything you're doing. Like, you should really be taking that dog for a lot more walks. But like, are they fully? I don't know. I'm not like off board. I'm reading the book, so like, I'm a little bit on board, clearly.
Totally.
That's
Yeah, I
so
feel like there's
funny.
like almost not a thin line, but there's a point where you're like, all right, I don't condone this character, but it's entertaining. I'm gonna keep reading it versus maybe I don't know if I can read this. I don't know if I can stomach what this character is doing. And like I've read about cannibalism. I've read about some wild stuff. So obviously my threshold for that is pretty high. So I can handle the unlikable characters. What's the cannibalism book?
That one was, let me see.
Is a certain hunger cannibalist? Is that?
No, I think that one is vampires.
Oh.
It was, or no, maybe it is cannibalism. It was Tender as the Flesh.
Oh, Tender's the Flesh.
Yeah, I was like in a thrift store dressing room, just like listening to them talk about cannibalism. And I was like, if only people knew what I
You're
was
like,
listening
just another day.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
You ever like coach younger writers, or like, is there overarching advice you would give to like young queer writers or young writers in general?
Well, I actually do. I have taught some online classes, and it's a class that I do on Zoom called Everything I Know About Writing, and I'll probably do it again. So you can like check out, I'll usually post it on my Instagram. It's Real Melissa Broder when I'm going to be doing that. And it's like I literally charge $10. It's like so cheap, and it's
Nice.
just like 3 hours of just like everything I know. But my advice is really just like read and write, you know? And oh, and also I think before you have like before like you know, I think it's great, like when you have deadlines for like, you know, if I, and also you don't need an MFA, like, you know, you don't even probably need a bachelor's, but I think it is good to have like a container and context and deadlines. So like, if you're not doing an MFA program, like if you're not doing a BA, you know, it's great to have like a writer's group, like a crew where you have like deadlines and things like, and sort of that container and that frame, because I, to me, like that context and that container is like super important, just to keep you going. Because otherwise, especially like in the world now where like we have such instant gratification from social media, I think that like it's harder to have patience with like the sort of fortitude it can take to write like even a short story, right? Like a long short story, but like a novel. So to have those sort of built-in moments, right, where we get to be sharing our work or we have like something that we're presenting it for, I think is like really important.
Is there anything you find hard to write? Like, is it hard to write like the first chapter, the first line? Is it hard to write sex scenes? Like, what do you struggle with the most?
What's hard for me is grounding in reality. So like I'm very good at interiority and like even dialogue, but like scene setting and stuff, I'm always like, why? You know, like I'm always like, oh, okay, it's a house. And it's like, no, I'm like, oh, I gotta describe the house. Also, the other thing is like, I think I come from a poetry background. So like when you read a poem, like something happens in a poem, but it can be very internal, right? Like the poem has a turn. But it's like, again, it can just be something internal. Whereas Like how, the externalization of plot, like I'm like, oh my God, like how much has to happen? Like how much actually happens in life? Not that much. I'm not that much happens in my life. Like what happened today? Like I took my dog to the vet because his like dewlap was like a little bit pronounced, and like I'm a neurotic parent. It was fine. It's probably the heat. And then like I took him to a park that I hate and like went there and sort of then like lapsed a little bit into like negative thinking about like what's the point? Why do we go on? Oh yeah, I woke up and rode. I did that too. Took my dog to the vet, went to the dog park, came home, did a little meditation, and like now I'm on with you guys. Like none of that really, I mean, is that none of those are
Right.
like
It could be
that
one chapter,
active.
that could be eight chapters. Like it depends on how much detail you want to give and what happened at the dog park.
But
And
I'm like, yeah, I feel
yeah.
like the
But like
story
nothing
is like
happened at the
what
dog
happened
at
in
the
your head at the
park.
vet and what happened in your head at the dog park. Like that's the story there, not
Yes,
necessarily what you did.
exactly. Like I was at the park and I was like, it's this park that I go to very rarely, but every time I go, I'm like, I don't like this park. It's not pretty. It's like an ugly park. Have you ever been to an ugly park? And
Yes. And you're
it's
like, what's
kind
the
of
point?
sad. Yeah, you're like, I'm at the park, but it's like an ugly park. So like, is this really a park or is this like a sort of a small circle of hell?
Just like some grass that looks like it needs to be rained on heavily very soon.
It was a very sad park. I'm like, this is a poor attempt at a park. So, right. So, but that's all the internal. But then I'm like, okay, well, like what happens on the outside? Like nothing has happened.
That's interesting because it's making me think of like a story where someone goes to like the sad park and then they're like making it their life's mission to change the park and getting involved in like local politics and all of like community organizing and stuff. Like that's where my mind is going.
Is
Like, how
it?
can we
That's,
fix
I
this
like your mind.
park? I have a savior complex a little bit,
That's
but
so nice. My mind is more like, what's wrong with me that I don't like this park? Like, what is this? How does this reflect like something? Like, there must be something wrong with me. And then, like, going home and like reading about like polyvagal theory and like trying to figure out, like, feeling like, oh no, I really need to hack my nervous system because like something's wrong with my nervous system that I don't like this park.
You said you're a Virgo, right? That makes sense. The neuroticism.
The nerve, just being like, oh no, the worry.
Something's wrong with me. I need fixed.
Yes, that's Virgo.
I get that a lot.
Couple more just for funsies. Do you have a queer obsession? It could be
Well,
literally anything. We've gotten tons of different answers on this.
totally. Well, at this like very moment, like today, June 24th. So like I'm like the last person to watch Bridgerton. Like no, like I'm like the
I
last
haven't
person.
watched it.
You haven't?
No, I'm
Okay.
actually the last.
Okay, so I'm like the last person. Okay, I'm the second to last person in America who hasn't seen Bridgerton. And I'm only on the first season, but like I'm really obsessed with, I'm like, when is this gonna get gay? Like
That last book.
Benedict's, like I'm so excited. Like I had no interest in Benedict's character at all. And then like now that like he like went to like the party with like the artist who's like queer, who's queer, I'm just like, here we go. I'm like, let's go. Let's
You're in
make this
for
gay. I'm like, I'm over Daphne. Like, let's, yeah. So I get very excited when things get gay that are like, so it's showing promise, but I better not, yeah, it better not be a disappointment.
That makes me want to watch it more though, because obviously I've heard all the hype, but no one, I didn't know there was a gay character. I had no idea.
Well, I'm hoping he's a gay character, Cheyenne.
I could see
That's
them like sprinkling it in, but like not giving you too much storyline, or just like, I don't know. I feel like people would talk about that a little bit more if.
Yeah, I'm hoping season two he gets gayer. Right now he just like witnessed two men, but I really love like yeah, so we'll see. But I'm keeping my fingers. I'll let you know. I'll email you. I'll be like it gets gay or like
Thank you.
it doesn't
I'll
get
tune in when
gay.
like they have like the main characters as
Yes.
ones. Like that's when they'll get me, but until then, I am gonna hold out.
Totally. But yeah, so that's what it is right now, literally, like as of today. But I have new queer obsessions all the time.
That's the only way to keep evolving for sure.
Yeah, I wasn't interested. I wasn't that in, like, I was watching it and like playing Block Puzzle Game until that happened, and then I was like, here we go.
All right. Well, I guess before we wrap up, is there anything you wish you could go back and tell your younger self, or anything that you would tell like younger queer people or queer people who are just now coming to terms with things or coming out?
It's a really good question. I think like you don't have to know what you are. You know, like I was very obsessed with trying to figure out and trying to know what I was, and like eventually I just gave up on trying to know, right? Because it's like we contain multitudes, and like that it really can be about the person. And
There's freedom and
absolutely.
not trying
Yeah.
to define everything.
Yes.
All right. Well,
Love
can
it.
you let our listeners know where they can find you? I know you kind of mentioned your Instagram earlier, but just in case they missed that, and if you want to plug anything upcoming.
And the best
Sure.
place to buy your books.
Yeah. So, indie bookstores, shout out. Like always, I mean, you can get them, you know, anywhere online, but I love an indie bookstore, and so support independent bookstores. You can get my books there. My Instagram is Real Melissa Broder, and my Twitter is Melissa Broder.
Thank you.
Perfect.
All right. And if you liked this episode, want to hear some more from us, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Obviously on our Sapphic Survival Guide. You found us once. I'm positive you can find us again. We are on social media at Sapphic Survival Guide everywhere except for X, which is just at Sapphic Survival. You can send us questions there. You can email us at sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voice message at 724-209-7372. And if you want to support us and get a little bit of extra content, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/ Sapphic Survival Guide. And you can find me, Cheyenne, at Hot Mess Bean on pretty much any social media platform.
And you can find me anywhere online at The Libre Gina, including my website, thelibregina.com. And with that, class is now dismissed.